Translation: Maharaj Yudhisthira said, "My dear uncle, do you remember how you always protected us along with our mother from all sorts of calamities? Your partiality, like the wings of a bird, saved us from poisoning and arson." Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Due to the Pandava's death at an early age, his minor children and widow were the object of special care by all the elderly members of the family, especially Bhishma Dev and Mahatma Vidura. Vidura was more or less partial to the Pandavas due to their political position. Although Dhritarashtra was equally careful for the minor children of Maharaj Pandu, he was one of the intriguing parties who wanted to wash away the descendants of the Pandu and replace them by raising his own sons to become the rulers of the kingdom. Mahatma Vidura could follow this intrigue of Dhritarashtra and company, and therefore, even though he was a faithful servitor of his elder brother Dhritarashtra, he did not like his political ambitions for the sake of his own sons. He was therefore very careful about the protection of the Pandavas and their widow mother. Thus, he was, so to speak, partial to the Pandavas, preferring them to the sons of Dhritarashtra, although both of them were equally affectionate in his ordinary eyes. He was equally affectionate to both camps of nephews in the sense that he always chastised Duryodhana for his intriguing policy against his cousins. He always criticised his elder brother for his policy of encouragement to his sons. And at that time, he was always alert in giving special protection to the Pandavas, as well as all these different activities of Vidura within the palace politics made him well known as partial to the Pandavas. Maharaj Yudhisthira has referred to the past history of Vidura before his going away from home for a prolonged pilgrimage journey. Maharaj Yudhisthira reminded him that he was equally kind and partial to his grown-up nephews even after the battle of Kurukshetra, the great family disaster. Before the Battle of Kurukshetra, Dhritarashtra's policy was peaceful annihilation of his nephews. And therefore, he ordered Puruchana to build a house at Vananvrata, and when the building was finished, Dhritarashtra desired that his brother's family live there for some time. When the Pandavas were going there in the presence of all the members of the royal family, Vidura tactfully gave instructions to the Pandavas about the future plans of Dhritarashtra. This is specifically described in the Mahabharata Adi Parava 1.14. He indirectly hinted a weapon not made of steel or any other material element can be more than sharp to kill an enemy. And he who knows this is never killed. That is to say, he hinted that the party of the Pandavas were being sent to Varanavata to be killed, and thus he warned Yudhisthira to be very careful of their new residential palace. He also gave indications of fire and said that fire cannot extinguish the soul but can annihilate the material body. But one who protects the soul can live. Kunti could not follow such indirect conversation between Maharaj Yudhisthira and Vidura, and thus, when she inquired from her son about the purpose of that conversation, Yudhisthira replied that from the talks of Vidura, it was understood that there was a hint of fire in the house where they were proceeding. Later on, Vidura came in disguise to the Pandavas and informed them that the housekeeper was going to set fire to the house on the 14th night of the waning moon. It was an intrigue of Dhritarashtra that the Pandavas might die altogether with their mother. And by his warning, the Pandavas escaped through the tunnel underneath the earth. so that their escape was also unknown to Dhritarashtra. So much so that after setting fire, the Kauravas, who were certain of the death of the Pandavas, that Dhritarashtra performed the last rites of death with great cheerfulness. And during the mourning period, all the members of the palace became overwhelmed with lamentation, but Vidura did not become so because of his knowledge that the Pandavas were alive somewhere. There are many such instances of calamities, and in each of them, Vidura gave protection to the Pandavas on one hand, and on the other hand, he tried to restrain his brother Dhritarashtra from such intriguing policies. Therefore, he is always partial to the Pandavas, just as a bird protects its eggs by its wings. Om Agyana Timrandishagana Jadashlagaya Chakshusha Militam Dena Tasmai Sigurabe Namaha. Namo Vishvadaya Krishnapadaya Vrtaleshmani Sura Goga Vinda Swami Tinamani Namo Vishvadaya Krishnapadaya Vrtaleshmani Bhaktivananta Swami Tinamani Namaste Sarasati Devam Gauravani Pacharini Nivesesha Sunivali Vasitandistani Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Interesting part of the Bhagavatam here. We see Vidura. He was great soul. He was a well-wisher, even of a personality who was trying to annihilate the Pandavas. He was still trying to give good counsel to Dhritarashtra. So in our life we see so many different classes of people. And the Vaishnava, he is always a well-wisher in all circumstances. He sees the living entities of jivas, spirit souls, encased in the material energy. And the material body will be inclined to act in so many different ways. So this is in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says the modes of nature force one to act according to the modes he's acquired. So demoniac persons, passionate fellows, ignorant fellows will act in all kinds of ways. And the Brahminical class are supposed to give good counsel in all circumstances. And they never give up giving good counsel. This is the whole idea of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. Ultimately, Prabhupada said, we are trying to create a society of Brahmins who can give good counsel and know what is to be done and what is not to be done. So there's two calculations here. One is a divine calculation, and the other one is self-centered. So one should calculate with divine intelligence. This Krishna is actually more than willing to give everyone. Krishna is very willing to give his counsel. He's sitting in our heart, as you know, in the Bhagavatam, two birds sitting in a tree. And so Krishna's there as a super soul, situating in everyone's heart. And he's trying to tell us and trying to indicate us how we should act. But whether we listen is another matter. So actually it's quite interesting. Recently I was reading a purport on the third canto of the Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada makes the point. He said, how it is that the heart changes, no one really knows. It's quite an interesting point, isn't it? How the heart changes, no one really knows. Because you can consider, oh, we will go to some counseling and we will get some nice advice. Yes, let's become merciful, let's do the right thing, let's look out for our lust, anger, greed, envy, let's have lots of classes on this matter so we can thoroughly understand it. Well, that is a fact, we should do that. So at least we know the rudimentaries of how the philosophy works. But how the actual purification takes place, no one really knows. Prabhupada says, no one really knows. Because it is the business of Krishna. Tesam satitam yuktanam. isn't it? Tesam yajatam vikshanam bhajatam patibhavakam tadami yogi tom. Sorry, tadami buddhi yogam tom. So, actually, in our life, what can we do? What can we do? We are entrapped in this material body. We have so much DNA, so much conditioning in us. So many, well, who is our generations after generations? We have the body of our ancestors. The Christians say the sins of the ancestors are with us. Don't they? They say like that. Well, it's true. Because we have a certain type of body, a certain type of DNA, a certain type of mind. Our soul is mixed in that energy, and we are acting according to that, and we are given a certain body according to previous karmas. A very complicated matter, actually. But one should not think, no, this is not the case. This is too inconceivable. Why is it inconceivable? It's not. I mean, look at computer technology today. How much information is placed inside one computer chip? So much information is there in one computer chip, isn't it? I mean, who's a computer geek around here? Anyone? I think I did look up once how much information there is on one small computer chip. It's a vast information. So if man can do such a thing, it's not so difficult to conceive of a higher intelligence that could work a system where each soul is placed into a specific body. That body is an arrangement, it's a machine. Therefore, Krishna said, for everyone is sitting in a machine made of material nature. So Krishna is arranging these through the demigods, and the jiva is sitting in his machine, and he's acting. He thinks he's the doer of activities, but he's being driven by his mind and senses. And he has a particular body according to his particular previous karma. This is not too difficult to understand, even scientifically. It's not that we have to have just blind faith in these matters. We should look at it scientifically. It's definitely possible. So how it is Krishna is allowing us to free ourselves from this material body, how it is that he's giving us the intelligence to do so. This is required. We need buddhi yoga, intelligence, to free ourselves from the body, to free ourselves from the way it tries to act, how the modes of nature are working in us. We are attracted to certain objects, we are repulsed by certain objects, so on and so forth. We become so involved in everyone else's lives around us. We look at this type of life, we look at that type of life. We become very entangled in it all. And we get to the stage where we're hankering and lamenting. We're very sorry to see great success of others because we want that success ourselves. This is the conditioning of the soul. Well, why do we want that success? What good will it bring us anyway? Are we getting any happiness from such success? No. What is real success in life is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is consciousness. The success of life is to understand consciousness and understand how it can become full of bliss, full of knowledge. In fact, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, this is the mystery of a Vaishnava. He is full of bliss and he's full of knowledge. This is the spiritual Shakti work, Satchitananda. He's eternal, full of bliss, full of knowledge. So the Vaishnava, he's very blissful. He's very friendly to all beings. He's full of knowledge. He understands his position. He understands how his body works, what his body is. You know, actually, he understands, well, really, a top Vaishnava, we could say, like our acharyas. We should not consider that they have come to the material world with a material body to enjoy sense gratification. They just appear to be playing that part. They are nitya siddhas. They are nitya siddhas. They never forgot Krishna. They're never influenced by their material bodies as we are. Therefore, Prabhupada once told his disciples, I never forgot Krishna. Never in my life did I ever forget Krishna. So, we as conditioned souls, I speak for myself, I'm sure you guys are a lot more fixed up in your knowledge and bliss than I am, due to your previous sukriti and your enthusiasm for spiritual life. Everyone's at different levels of their understanding. But we, as insignificant parts of Krishna, because after all, Krishna has expanded himself into unlimited billions and billions of forms, we're just a tiny fragmental. So what can we do? We must beg to the Lord to accept our service. Even though our service is imperfect and our motivations may be sometimes ill, and we may, we may not become so, but we must beg the Lord to accept our service. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami said, Krishna may or may not. It's up to him. He's independent. He may or may not accept your service, but at least we should try. We should always be begging the Lord, you know, like that, to please accept our service. There was one tape Prabhupada was speaking like this. Has anyone heard that tape? I think it was on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance day. He was very emotionally speaking for Krishna to accept his service. So Rupa Goswami, he also brings out the similar point. He says, hope against hope. It is hope against hope. We have no great aristocracy in us. We have no great wealth. We have no great intelligence. We have no great anything. Still, hope against hope. And we must remain confident, hopeful and enthusiastic that Krishna may, and if we do so, Krishna may notice us. And as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, you should act in such a way that Krishna may notice you. So he will notice us if we remain hopeful, confident, and enthusiastic. So this two types of Yudhisthira, he was speaking of Vidura. Vidura was such a personality. He was empowered with buddhi yoga, intelligence, and he could follow the intrigues of Dhritarashtra. Because actually Srila Prabhupada was also like that. Such a very clever person, Prabhupada, wasn't he? Right? So intelligent. Very, very intelligent. Krishna gave him such intelligence. Incredible. If you listen to his conversations and the things he says and reacts to in so many different ways, he is, and you can consider how it is that Prabhupada controlled and could converse with so many different types of people. You know, look at the early days of ISKCON. You had some of the very highly intelligent men like Tamal Krishna Maharaj, some of these big devotees in the early days, very powerful people. And Prabhupada could deal with them all, unlimited amounts of them. It's very difficult to deal with personalities sometimes. But Prabhupada could there's another side of intelligence. You can understand someone else's personality and how to engage them. This is personalism. Personalism. Sometimes personalities become troublesome. But Prabhupada knew how to deal with each personality in a very intelligent way and encourage them in their devotional life. So these devotees who are like Vidura, they are always chanting of the glories of Krishna. This verse is there. Satitam kirtiyantumam yantuscha dhritavratta namaschan yastamam bhaktya nitya yukta upashtate. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me. These great personalities perpetually worship me with devotion. This is devotion, Prabhupada says. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Such a Mahatma, Prabhupada says, he is determined, he has determination to achieve the ultimate end, to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in one of the five transcendental rasas. And to achieve this success, he engages all activities, mental, body, vocal, everything in the service of Krishna. This is This is how Krishna's devotee acts. He always enthusiastically tries his best. He's making plans. He may not be doing much now, but he's making plans. If only I could do this, 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 and this. And he tries to very nicely fit in with all the devotees around him. This is another symptom of a Vaishnava. He's a very good team worker, isn't he? Good team worker, very humble. He works in teams, and he knows how to humbly play his part. So Dhritarashtra had a problem. His main problem was he was identifying with his body, and he was identifying with his products of his body, his children. It's very difficult for the Grihastha. He has his family. He has his family around him. He wants them to become very victorious, very wonderfully. He wants them to do so well. And if he is not Krishna conscious, he will make certain ambitions within his mind. And he will sometimes... he will do ruthless things just to make his children, he thinks, happy. But the main, Prabhupada says, the Paramahansa Grihastha. There's a Paramahansa Grihastha. He is someone that, he does his business. He does his business very nicely. But actually he's not really so absorbed in the ultimate goal of material life. He has his children, he has his wife, he has his bank balance, he has to do this. But he does it externally. Internally, his goal is to become Krishna conscious. He does not neglect his family, but he doesn't overly engage his mind and intelligence in plotting and making sure his family has a successful life and his children have a successful life. He does his best, but he has a certain... detachment from that as well. So unless you have that detachment, I mean, after all, how are your children going to become happy? They're only going to become happy if they engage in devotional life in the sense that their consciousness is linked with Krishna. Then they will become very happy and blissful. Otherwise, how else are they going to become happy and blissful? So this is the goal of the Paramahansa Grihastha. He wishes that his devotees become purified in heart and they directly or indirectly become engaged in devotional life. So Queen Kunti, this Dhritarashtra had this such a... I mean, what a ruthless plan, isn't it? Ruthless plan. He wanted to kill the Pandavas just so his son... And there's intrigues like this in history. Someone who's so absorbed in matter, he's prepared to do anything. And actually, even if he doesn't do it externally, if you analyze the conditioned soul's mind, he's so many calculations he's making to place himself in certain conditions. The mind is ruthless. It will come up with so many ideas. So one should always neglect the mind and always keep it fixed in Krishna, not taking it too seriously. Therefore, Krishna says, the mind is the best friend or worst enemy. So Queen Kunti, she's a good example, isn't she? Because she had two families, Prabhupada says. She was the daughter of the Vrishni family and the wife and the mother of the Pandava family. So generally a woman has got affection both for the father's family and husband's family. So she is asking Krishna, I am a woman. Generally I am attached to my family. So kindly cut off this attachment so that I can thoroughly become attached to you. This is her purpose. Because without you, she says, without you, Lord, either this family or any opulence or anything, it is like zero. So family attachment is very difficult to give up. But by the process of chanting the holy name and engaging in devotional life then one's family extend to the greater family. And he begins to see everyone as his family, and ultimately Krishna as the supreme father, you could say. This was shown even by the gopis. Do you remember the story when Krishna plays his transcendental flute at night? The gopis go running off. They give up all their families. In fact, in one purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Maharaj says they gave up their family like vomit, almost, I think he said. I must get that checked out. I think is what he said. They just gave up, you know, just... Why? Because they went to Krishna, and Krishna says, why do you come here? You should go back to your families, your husband and your children. Why have you come this dead of night to come? But they said, actually, Krishna, you are the only husband. You are the original. Our very consciousness belongs to you. You are the very source of our consciousness. So this is the position of Krishna. And this is why actually Krishna has come to this world. He's only come to this world to display his family, to display his rasa, his love, his loving exchanges. He wants to show us this is what love is. And we know from the story of... who was that who went to Vrindavan? That was Vidura as well, wasn't it? He went to, Krishna sent him. Uddhava. Yeah, Uddhava was sent to Vrindavan, and Krishna sent him there to show Uddhava, this is love, the activities of the residents of Vrindavan, how they're acting. You can read that story in pastime there. So this is... this is something that one should understand deeply. How our consciousness is searching after a certain sweetness. And that sweetness of consciousness is there in the soul. It exists in the soul. Sisi Radha Gokunanda Kitamana Sitamana Moksanaman Kijai. Therefore, Nitya Siddha Krishna Bhima Subjikavana Shravanada Shura Titi Karna. Love of God is already in the heart. You just have to bring it out. So this sweetness is in our heart. So we have to learn how to bring this sweetness out. That is through the devotional service of the Lord. So let's see. One thing we can discuss in this verse is justice, which I have made some notes of. So if one takes the path of Dhritarashtra, making so many calculations to place oneself in a happy material situation, one should be very wary of where that might take us, and also who will influence us in such thoughts. Because when you think about it, the whole material world is doing that business. Everyone in the material world, the politicians, all the kamis, they're simply making calculations of how to satisfy their senses. So this is a very slippery path. And in that path, the complexities of material nature will force us in so many different ways. And we can see the result of such a society today. It is unjust society. It is an unjust society. It is a society where there is so much misery. So, let me just... Let me get to the point of justice for a second. Because it's very unjust for Dhritarashtra to act in such a way. So, let me just get to this point. Towards the end of my, I want to bring up this point. So free will and determinate in this life, what we actually are witnessing is free will. The jiva has free will. He's acting in so many different ways, and by his activities, determinism is taking place. Determinism in the sense that material nature is awarding him the results of his activities. We cannot avoid this deterministic nature of the material world. And even in scientific circles, this is actually understood. If you study nature, it has a very determined system to it. Like Einstein, he studied nature and he can see that matter acts in a certain way and you can determine how it's going to act. It's very predictable. But when consciousness is involved in this system, when consciousness is involved within matter, there's another element. And this element is called free will. And so when free will is added to matter, it becomes unpredictable. You do not know how anyone's going to act. So this is, although some devotees have a debate on this point, they think that Krishna knows everything. What do you think of that matter? So one devotee said to me, Krishna knows everything. Let's discuss that point. Who thinks that Krishna knows everything? You think Krishna knows? Okay, good. Now, do you think, what do you think, Srinivas Prabhu? He knows everything. So if Krishna knows everything, then how is it you have free will?
In surrender on to me, Bhurijan Prabhu explains his point, how there's three points here. Sometimes Krishna says the jiva is the controller, material nature is the controller. Then Krishna, sometimes he says he's the controller. So within that, he's explained how Krishna allows the jiva, his independence, to make him realize that the material world will not make him happy.
Yeah. So what you're saying is then that the material energy is Krishna's understanding how the material energy acts.
Yeah.
So the jiva is placed inside the material energy. Actually, this Prabhupada says, this is the answer to this question. Prabhupada says that the high court judge knows what the destination of the criminal is. If you commit a crime, the high court judge already knows what your destination will be. So in that sense, Krishna knows if you act within the material energy in a certain way, he already knows what the result of that activity is. In that way, Krishna is all-knowing. But you have the choice to make that action. You are not a dead machine. You can make the choice. Krishna's not forcing you. So in this way, a little free will is there. And the question arises, does Krishna know when you're going to make that decision? I say no. He does not know. And therefore, there's a story of Brother Sangha in that, what's that story in the, where that devotee is going, wandering, and then he comes back to Krishna, Gopakumā, and then Krishna embraces him and he says, ah, now you have come. Does Krishna know when he's going to? So Prabhupada makes the point of free will like that. So it is my understanding, at least, that Krishna, we are not machines, and we can make our own choice at any time, and Krishna is waiting for us to make that choice. So in that way, Krishna is not all-knowing. What do you think, Prabhupada?
I mean, Krishna says in the Gita, bhavishyani cha bhutani mam tu vedana kashchana. I know past, present and future, I know all living beings, but me nobody knows.
Yeah.
So I think Krishna is all-knowing. Just because someone knows what you're going to do, it doesn't mean they're causing you to do it. Like say, for example, if you put an alcoholic in a room with nothing except a can of beer, and then you say, well, I think he's going to drink the beer. Mm-hmm. Then if he drinks the beer, it's not because you thought he's going to drink the beer. You just knew all the factors about that situation and therefore made the conclusion. And obviously Krishna knows all the factors perfectly.
Yeah.
So I don't think Krishna knowing everything has to be mutually exclusive with individuals having free will. But one point may be that for the purpose of rasa or relationships, Krishna can cover his own all-knowing potency in order to experience relationship. That's another thing. But even that's Krishna's will, because he gets covered by his own energy.
Yes.
But that's my understanding.
Yeah, that is especially in the spiritual realms in Goloka Vrindavan, where Krishna's having his ras, his majesty, and he is covered by his sweetness. But still, you can look this up online, this topic. Prabhupada speaks about it. And he says, we are not stones. And he makes the point that Krishna, he knows the destiny. He gives the example of the high court judge, like you said. You could say in the sense that an alcoholic in a room or a thief. Krishna knows the destiny of someone because the spirit soul is within matter. Matter's one of his energies. It works in so many different complex ways. As soon as you act within matter, immediately Krishna knows what the result will be. You know, you're trapped inside a machine of material. One of Krishna says is my material energy. It's a very, very complex energy. Very, very. As soon as you act in one way, Krishna immediately knows what the result is. In that way, but how you act is completely up to you. But he knows the destination as soon as you make that choice. But when you make your choice, and Krishna's not making that choice for you. Now, you could say that Krishna will think, well, this spirit soul is like this, and he's bound to make. No, he doesn't. You know. Because material energy is another energy from the spiritual energy. The original spirit soul is free from that energy. Therefore, when he's in his spiritual consciousness, he's not going to be acting in the same way as when he's in the material energy. So the free will remains in both situations, but in the material energy, when the soul is acting in an artificial way, there's a whole machinery in place to and Krishna knows very well how that machinery works. So this business of karma and free will is an interesting one. Even the other aspect which we can discuss here, this is unjust. So you could say, why is it that the Pandavas suffered? Why did Jesus Christ suffer? Why did this is not good? So you could pose the question, could you not? If someone is suffering even though they don't deserve to suffer, is there such a situation where someone suffers and they don't deserve to suffer? I say yes. Just like my free will bit, you may disagree with me. I say yes. And Prabhupada also confirms this when he says, one who does wrong or suffers wrong is wrong. He quotes a Bengali poet. And in that particular context, he was speaking in Vrindavan when the local municipality were dumping sewage into the ISKCON's property. So the devotees went to him and said, Prabhupada, this is happening. And then one devotee said, well, Prabhupada, it must be our karma. Must be our... I said, no. One who does wrong or suffers wrong is wrong. So sometimes devotees have an idea of everything's karma, Prabhupada. But even Jesus Christ, Prabhupada says in one Prabhupada, what wrong did he do? Or how is that takwa? If you're in the material world, you're in a place where many demons are. They will always try. It's a very disturbing energy. This is no fit place for gentlemen. So, justice. The Krishna conscious movement must establish justice. We cannot say, oh, it is your karma, Prabhu. It's okay. You must have. No, no. This is unjust. You should not be suffering in that way. So, we should study the point. Just like here, we see. And therefore Krishna has come. Vidura is giving the hints. This is unjust. And Krishna gave him the intelligence to tell someone, look out for this, look out for that. And when Mother Bhumi went to Lord Brahma and said, this material world is such a... the military defense forces are being built up and the whole world is going to hell. And please go and see Krishna. Lord Brahma went to Krishna and said, can you please, did Krishna say, oh, why are you bothering me? This is just karma. Why don't you just play it out? No. He said, yes, I will immediately come and I will reestablish the principles of religion. I will reestablish justice. And those that are acting wrongly, we will... This is quite a complex matter because we do, isn't it? You have to consider what karma is. And if someone's acting we cannot always turn around and say, it is your karma, Prabhu. Why are you complaining? What do you think? Who understands this principle? One who does wrong or suffers wrong is wrong. Anyone like to comment on that? I have many debates in my family. They think I'm mad. They think I got it wrong. But I think I think it's a very difficult subject to understand thoroughly. Let's see. Anyone like to comment on one who does wrong or suffers wrong is wrong?